This is the Building Resilience Podcast, episode 189, The Power of Music, Part 1. Welcome to Building Resilience, a podcast where theory, practical strategies, and inspiring stories show you how to unlock your best life. I'm your host, Leah Davidson. As a certified life coach, speech-language pathologist, and nervous system resilience expert, it is my mission to teach you how to be more resilient to life's adversities. I will show you how to manage your mind, befriend your nervous system, process your emotions, and even eliminate stress. It's time to do more than just survive. It's time to thrive. Let's get started. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Building Resilience Podcast. I am happy to have you here, as always. I have been thinking about doing this episode on the power of music for a while. And as I was preparing, I realized that I actually wanted to share a personal story about music and connection. But the story is a little bit long, so I decided that I was going to have to divide this topic into two. The personal story, setting the stage today, and then a deeper look at music next week. So as you are probably aware, if you've been listening to the podcast, I am also a speech-language pathologist. And pre-COVID, I would get my referrals often from lawyers or case managers, as most of my clients have been in some type of accident. And so there was usually a legal case involved and, of course, an insurance company that was funding the rehabilitation. Now, most of the time, my clients, obviously, they had challenges within their cognitive communication, so they had sustained head injuries. And most of the time, I would go and I would see them in their homes. Or if they were kids or teens, I would go to their school. Occasionally, if they were back at work, I would go to their workplace to meet with them. Now, occasionally, somebody would not want to meet with me in their home. So I would arrange to meet with them at a coffee shop or at a library. Maybe they just even wanted a change of scenery. Sometimes there were a lot of distractors at home. Maybe there were other people around, too many people living there. And sometimes the environment was just not conducive to therapy sessions. Now, back in 2015, I got a referral to see a man named Henry. That's what we'll call him. He wanted to meet me at the local library, and I understood from the case manager that his home was not really conducive for sessions, and so I happily agreed to meet elsewhere. He was about 72, I think, at the time, and he was very suspicious of me. He was not trusting at all. He did not want to do therapy. He questioned whether he needed it, which is actually quite common, especially for speech pathology, because most people don't realize what speech pathologists actually do. They think that speech pathologists are for people who work with children with articulation problems or stuttering problems, and that is true. But there are many different branches of speech pathology, and they don't realize that a speech pathologist who works with somebody who has had a head injury or any other type of acquired brain injury, we work with an area called cognitive communication. And essentially what that is how your cognition impacts your communication. So everything from your attention, your memory, your word finding, your listening skills, your reading and writing, and really important area of executive function skills. Now, I did a whole episode a while back all about explaining what speech pathologists did. And I also did an episode all about executive function skills. So you may want to go back and listen to that. But because we deal with cognition and communication, it's pretty comprehensive. And many people do actually need our help. They just don't even know it because they don't understand what speech pathologist does. Anyhow, I knew that I didn't have the buy-in from Henry, but he was agreeable to meet because, frankly, his lawyer told him he had to. Well, during my assessment, I collected a lot of background information. I learned that he was German. He had lived there up until his adulthood, and he had spent actually a lot of time traveling the world. He was pretty much estranged from his family. He wasn't connected at all. He had a twin brother, but he had very little contact with him. He did not like talking about his family, and he basically self-professed that he was a loner. He had spent much of his life alone. He referred to himself as being more of a hermit. He had never had a partner, although at some point he did share with me that he had one love of his life, but had been hurt and had never pursued a relationship again. So initially, he didn't give me too much information, but as time went on, I learned a lot more. He learned to trust me. I got to know him so much better, and I heard many, many amazing stories about his life and travels. Well, about a year after I started seeing him, I told him I was going to Germany with two of my children, and we were actually visiting where my grandparents were from. And I happened to mention I'd visit Berlin, where my grandfather was from. And then I would visit a small town called Lübeck, which is just outside of Hamburg. And this is where my grandmother was from. And amazingly enough, this was where he was from. He had always just said Germany, but when I had said I'm going to Lübeck, he was like, oh my gosh, this is exactly where I'm from. So this was an incredible bonding moment. And he loved sharing with me some of his stories from Germany, from growing up in Lübeck. And then when I went on my trip, he wanted to hear every single detail. He wanted to see all my pictures, and I shared some of them. I was able to work them into our sessions. And this really helped us build even more a deeper connection. And that deeper connection meant he was much more agreeable to work on our goals together. And that really just goes to show how important the therapeutic relationship is. So we worked together. He shared many stories about his life, including his love of music. Now, he especially loved opera. And he told me stories of seeing many operas at the opera house in Vienna. He was actually a fascinating man. He wore the same shirt over and over, and he told me he just preferred to buy new shirts rather than do laundry. He was very intrigued that I had five children, and he started to bring me things for my kids. He seemed to love to collect things. Now, I suspect he was a collector and his home was filled with stuff because he would bring me things like five flashlights or five pads of post-it notes or paper clips or pens and always said that they were for my kids. And they weren't terribly new. It was really funny when I'd get home from my sessions, the kids would say, "What did Henry give today?" Now, I obviously told him that he didn't have to give me these things. He could probably give them to charity. But he said he really enjoyed sharing them with me. These were just trinkets. So I went along with it. I obviously had contact with the case manager who was working with him. And we just agreed that it was probably best just to let him continue to give me these random things because he seemed to really enjoy it. And in her mind, she said it's probably helping him declutter a little bit. So the whole way through, as we were meeting in the library week after week, his long-term memory was actually really good, and which is often the case following traumatic brain injury. The short-term memory is something that gets impacted, but the long-term memory is often usually pretty good. Now, a short-term memory was a challenge for him. He used to carry around a little notepad in his shirt pocket, and he would write everything in it. He only had a flip phone, and he was not interested in getting anything more updated. And we worked on many strategies so that he could use them, but that little pen and paper pad was a lifesaver for him, and it was his go-to memory strategy. Now, after seeing him weekly for about 2 years, he continued to make gains, and despite the gains, his funding was cut and we no longer were able to hold sessions. And this is something that often happens. So while I was disappointed and frustrated that we were being cut off while he was still making gains, he was actually doing okay. He had some good strategies and he was still going to be followed by the case manager. So this was around 2017, the beginning of 2017 or so. Now, fast forward, and near the end of 2018, I got a phone call from his case manager, who had been continuing to monitor him and was somewhat involved. And she shared with me that Henry was not doing well. He was actually going to have to move out of his home, and he was going to be placed in a senior's residence where he could receive some support. Physically, he was still quite active. In fact, apparently, he was very high-functioning, especially when he went to the senior's home. He was probably the most high-functioning person physically there, and he was very independent physically, but his language had tremendously deteriorated. Now, at the time, they were not sure if it was some type of dementia or something else that happened because there was such a drastic deterioration with his language. The insurance agreed that they were going to fund speech pathology services again. So I arranged to meet up with him again. I made my way to the senior's home, actually had a higher level of care, so it was more like a hospital. And he was in a room with four others. He had a curtain around his bed for his privacy. That was sort of the borders, the walls of his room. I went in to see him. He jumped up and hugged me and was so happy to see me. I had to do a reassessment, and truthfully, I was actually devastated. His speech and language was dramatically different than the last time I had seen him. Whereas we used to have some good in-depth conversations, we still had to use strategies for word finding and things like that. But now he was really limited to the occasional word and gesture. His comprehension was decent. It wasn't great, but it was decent. So I knew that this was going to be a very different kind of therapy. I set my schedule to come once a week, and I had all sorts of plans, as we do as speech pathologists, to do different exercises and different activities to stimulate his language. But every time I arrived, he just wanted to go to the garden with me. He liked walking around, and he tried desperately to tell me stories, but it was very frustrating for him. He wasn't keen on the activities that I tried to get him to do. And I've always tried to be a very functional therapist, and I really want to follow the client's lead. So I had to get really creative. I knew he loved travel, and I knew he loved music. He also loved doing things that felt like real activities and not just therapy. And so I got creative. I was able to secure him funding for an iPad, which was a game changer for him. This is where I love the use of technology. Now, I had to teach him how to use it, and we actually had a support worker come in and work with him more frequently to help him learn how to use it. And I was able to motivate him to do some work that I wanted to do to help stimulate his language that I knew would be really beneficial for him. And we used the iPad as a break in between tasks. Now, he loved to travel, so I, at the time, would bring in travel magazines, and we would scour travel magazines, and it was so helpful for him to have something very tangible. At that time, my son was on his mission in Tahiti, and Henry had traveled to Bora Bora in years past and loved Bora Bora. So I was able to show him some of Zach's pictures from Tahiti and also bring magazines that had lots of pictures of Bora Bora. We would look at maps. I brought in an atlas, and then we would use the iPad to explore travel-related things, looking up different places where he had traveled and try to read different articles and so forth that I would read to him. His absolute favorite thing, though, was music. It was his passion. So I built many of our activities around music, vocabulary around music, discussions around his favorite opera singers. We read about musicians, we read lyrics, we talked about meanings behind songs. We looked at different autobiographies and histories of his favorite bands. Now, obviously, it was very, very slow as his language is limited, but he was engaged. His all-time favorite thing to do, though, was listen to music. So we would do some of what I wanted, as he said, and then we would watch a music video or listen to a song. And when I would play that music video or listen to a song, it was like he truly became alive. Sometimes it was like he was conducting the music. He would close his eyes and he would move his arms like the conductor. The support worker really tried to set him up with playlists so he could listen to music when we weren't there, but it was very hard for him to do things independently. So I knew that my time with him was one of the few times that he could actually listen to the music. Now, remember, he had no family, he had very few friends, so he rarely had a visitor. And some of the staff actually thought I was his daughter because nobody else came in. Now, around Christmas of 2019, the case manager called me to tell me she had received word that Henry's twin brother had passed away. His nephew had reached out and actually sent some photos of Henry's brother and his family. The case manager told me she had visited Henry and she had told Henry about the brother's death. She had left him with the album that the nephew had sent over, but she actually wasn't sure how much Henry had understood. And she wanted to give me the heads up and see if I could also talk with him to make sure that he had understood what happened. So I went to our usual session. We met in the main room. The support worker happened to be there at that time too. Maybe we were supposed to have an overlap session. I can't quite remember, but he was there as well. And we started our session as per usual, trying to talk about Henry's week. We tried to have a conversation with the support worker, all the normal things that we did in sessions. And then Henry wanted to listen to some music and watch videos as per usual. So we tried to do a little bit of work and then turned to the reward of listening to the music. So I put some music on and some videos on, and he closed his eyes, and I could see he started getting lost in the music. And he continued listening. And then I noticed he started to get teary. And as he listened, he got more and more upset. And he completely broke down and started sobbing as this music played. I feel myself just getting emotional, just thinking back to this moment. I just held him in my arms as he sobbed. The music played in the background. The support worker turned away as it was truly a heartbreaking scene to watch. And as I held Henry, I was able to just talk with him and slowly able to get a few words out of him. He definitely had understood his twin brother was gone and was deeply grieving the loss. And not just the loss of his brother's life, but the loss of their relationship and the regret he had for not really having a relationship for all these years. For his loneliness, for the loss of his parents, the loss of his past, the loss of his language, and the grief of his life now. It honestly was one of the most tender moments of my career. And it made me realize that there was something far greater than the word-finding exercises I always wanted to do. The bond that we had built over the years, the connection, the relationship, led me to be able to support this man in the depths of his grief, even when he had no language to share. But he didn't need the words. The music stirred this emotion in him and served as a way for him to connect to himself and to connect with me. And I stayed longer that afternoon, and we just sat and listened to his favorite music. Now, about a month later, my husband was heading off on a business trip to Vienna. He was going to be there for a few days, and he decided he wanted to see a performance in the opera house. And I mentioned to him that I was so jealous about it based on all the stories that I had heard Henry tell about this opera house. And I so desperately wanted to see this opera house. But Rob left on his business trip, and I continued on my usual week. I had my regular appointment with Henry mid-afternoon. And just as I was heading into it, Rob sent me a text saying, "Hey, guess what? I'm at the Vienna Opera House. I'm getting ready to watch the ballet." I was so excited because it was perfect timing for my session with Henry. I asked Rob if he would make a video of the opera house and I could show it to Henry. And he did. And he sent it to me. So I met with Henry and I shared the video with him. And Rob was in the opera house. It was live. He was watching the ballet. And so he would just send little snippets of the video and I would share those videos with Henry. Henry was over the moon. And I was able to transfer these videos to his iPad so he could watch them over and over and over again. And as I sat watching Henry, I actually took a video on my own phone of him watching the videos that Rob had sent. And then we took a short video together so I could send to Rob to show how happy Henry was. Rarely do I ever make a video of me and a client of that nature. And it is still one that I have on my phone to this day. It was a very tender moment, and I truly cherish it to be able to bring some of that music that tied him to his past, make it come alive again, was just so special. It's not so often that you get to see something so simple bring somebody so much joy. Now, I continued meeting with Henry on a weekly basis. And it was nice to see that his nephew had continued to be in touch with him and was sending him regularly photos of the nephew's family. And Henry really enjoyed looking at these photos, and I would read him like the short little snippets that the nephew would send. I was sad that so many years had been lost for Henry and his family, but happy that he was reconnecting with them and he was having this time. And we continued listening to music every session. Henry was even more determined to introduce me to opera and to share any memories he had of being at the Vienna Opera House. But he also loved watching the music of Andrea Bocelli and Josh Groban. And so we would watch many of those videos. He loved to share what he would call some more modern day music as well. And that would be videos of like Neil Young and the Beatles. Those were things that were more modern for him. Music was really a way that he felt he could communicate and connect because his language continued to deteriorate. Now, all this time brings me to the beginning of March 2020. My regular schedule was to meet with him every Wednesday afternoon, and we met, as per usual, the first week of March and had a session scheduled for the second week of March. Now, I was going to be going away the second week of March to Spain, so we had shifted the time and the day just to make it a little bit earlier in the week. However, as it turned out, as it often does right before I'm going away, there was a lot to get done. I was feeling completely overwhelmed. It is extremely rare for me to cancel on a client unless I'm ill. But for some reason, this overwhelm, I had so much to do, I decided I had to cancel. I was really bothered about canceling because I knew Henry would be disappointed. And I also knew I would have no way of really confirming if he would get my message that I was canceling, that I would just see him a few weeks later when I was back from my trip. So I had called and left a message at the nursing station. I messaged him as well, but he still was not quite able to use his iPad consistently to retrieve messages or to take calls or FaceTime. So I kind of crossed my fingers and hoped that he received the message. Now, of course, you know that being March 2020, everything fell apart at that time. We actually left for our trip to Barcelona, where we were going to meet up with my brother and sister-in-law and head to Mallorca. And we arrived in Europe only for literally all hell to break loose as slowly the world started shutting down. We were stuck in Barcelona and had to find a way home. And if you recall, Spain was one of the hardest countries hit initially. We ended up being able to get a flight to Mexico City and then a flight to Toronto. It was a bit of a roundabout way to get home, but that was the only way we were able to do it. So the world was going into shutdown mode. I was very busy trying to get all my kids home. Believe it or not, we had kids spread out around the world. My oldest stepson was in the US at school, but we knew he was going to stay there and he was good there. My stepdaughter was in Hawaii at school and she was actually trying to find a flight to come home. My oldest son was on his mission in Tahiti and that was a bit of a fiasco, but eventually missionaries from all around the world made it home. And my other son was away in Botswana with his dad. And that's a story on its own about how we got him home. And then my poor youngest stepson was just in Toronto with his mom, wondering how everyone else in the family was going to get home. But we all did. And we all quarantined in our home like everybody else did. It was such a crazy time. And around the end of the fourth week of March, I received a phone call from Henry's case manager asking me when the last time was that I saw Henry. I told her it was the first week of March. And I felt horrible that I had to cancel the second week of March. And she wanted to confirm that I had not been there the second week of March. See, every time you go to visit, you had to sign in and out. And their records had indicated that I had not been. But because it was such a regular routine, they wanted to double check with me. I told her I felt so bad and I wasn't sure if Henry got the message. But of course, I wasn't able to go now to explain to him what had happened because the world was in shutdown mode. Well, she told me that the reason she was calling was because Henry had contracted COVID. He was one of the first of many in our city and in seniors' home, and he had just passed away. And the seniors' home was concerned because they knew that I visited weekly, and they were trying to get in touch with me to warn me that I might have been exposed. But because I had missed my session that week, I likely was not at risk. I was absolutely shocked and devastated. Of course, at that time when one contracted COVID, everything was unknown. So I was extremely grateful that I had not seen him and I had not been exposed. And I do think that someone is looking out for me because it's so rare that I would cancel on a client like that. That is my story about Henry. All that to say, when his language was slowly disappearing, we were able to stay connected through music. He was able to find joy through music. He was able to express himself through music. He was able to mourn and grieve through music. And now I am able to remember him through music. There is not a time that I'd hear Andrea Bocelli and don't think of Henry and our sessions together. I'm also so grateful that on my phone, I have these few short videos of me and Henry. I have no other videos with any other clients, but I have them of him. And sometimes I just watch them to remind myself of the importance of the simple things in life, like getting lost in music. Next week, we're going to talk a lot more about why and how music is so powerful. But for this week, I want to encourage you to think of the role that music plays in your life and what it does for you, and really encourage you to make room for music in your life. I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Building Resilience Podcast. If you're interested in learning a little bit more about managing stress, building resilience, and leading a more purposeful life, then make sure we're connected on Instagram and Facebook at Leah Davidson Life Coaching. You can also subscribe to my weekly newsletter at www.leahdavidsonlifecoaching.com/newsletter. Looking forward to connecting.